welcome one and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 118. Before we get started, we're going to announce that we're also pushing back our Backyard Week again. I mean, it's really fitting that Backyard Week kind of gets pushed to the side.
The Backlog podcast is now in the backlog of our podcast.
Just because the only person here from the usual is Jason, everybody else is MIA. And I mean, the whole point of Backyard Week is for us to play our old games and for you too before I talk about the purpose. Dad and I spent a lot of my weekend with my Xbox 360 trying to get that to work, so I haven't actually had time to play much. That said, let's introduce our panel. As I mentioned before, we have Jason.
Howdy.
And joining us for two times in a row on two different podcasts, though, we have Dan.
Hey.
So yes, it's been a kind of eventful week this week. It's San Diego Comic Con. It's a huge week if you're into movies.
Age of Ultron,
Superman, Batman, Captain America, Thor, new trailers for tons of movies. The one thing, and this is coming as a fan, that doesn't really seem to get much news out of Comic-Con these days is comics. Like, there's stuff, but usually it's nothing exciting.
Well, there's a new Tomb Raider comic, there's an Assassin's Creed in India comic.
I will say I'm excited for the Tomb Raider comics because it's being written by Gail Simone, who's one of my favorite writers in comics right now.
Did you ever play Tomb Raider?
No, that was one of my backyard games, which is part of the reason for trying to get the system to work.
It's $12.50 on Steam right now, just saying.
But I already own it. It defeats the purpose of finding it.
Why did you buy it then?
No, I bought it to play it, and then I got Mass Effect 3 and that. Because, you know, I told you before at the start of the year, I'm trying this one game per system thing. So I was saying Mass Effect.
I should do that.
And my 360 broke, as I've noted before, so it's kind of been 3 weeks of a bunch of games I can't touch. I don't have anything on my PS3. It kind of sucks, but what can you do?
If only you had Plus. And then you'd have infinite games on your PS.
Well, I have PS. I have a bunch of free month subscriptions, and I put them up whenever there's games I want, so I can get those. And that this way, I can stretch out my thing instead of getting a bunch of games I don't want to get. Speaking of, Assassin's Creed 2, I believe, is free for Xbox Live Gold users this month.
Yep.
If you haven't played that, because they're on the fourth one, which is the sixth game in the series.
But I will say, 2 was my favorite, so...
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. It is my favorite, too.
Well, there you go. It's your favorite, and it's free. So, I mean, granted, it defeats the purpose for you two, but...
Right, we've already played it.
Yeah, but, you know, it's nice to just add it to the collection.
Yeah, it's always nice to recommend games. But, I guess I'm not talking about games you've beaten, unless you have beaten something this week. We're going to talk about games you've been playing.
I've beaten several games this week, actually.
Oh, fancy us. I will... I'm just going to kick it off because I've already played like, the tutorial area of this, but I figured I might as well talk about it. And sadly, neither Phil nor Chad are here to actually correct me on my crap. Maybe Dan. I'm playing Shin Megami Tensei 4.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought that deal that Nintendo had with Fire Emblem in this game was kind of sweet. I already had Fire Emblem. I got to pay like $25 for Amazon.
Yeah, I
figured this will allow me to try a new game, and that's never a bad thing. And I wanted to use the $30 credits to buy Earthbound. So I spent $50 to get a free $30 to spend $10. So, yeah, this super frugal gamer really has odd logic. Like I said, I've already kind of done the tutorial, which is kind of you in a dungeon just learning the basics. It's a very interesting game, mechanically. It's a turn-based RPG of sorts. It's kind of... I don't want to say Pokemon. I would say it's closer to... Have any of you ever played Tales of Symphonia Dawn of the New World?
Yeah, I would call it similar to that, too.
Yeah. Where you basically go and battle against demons, and you're able to have demons join your team. But unlike, you know, Pokemon or Tales of Symphonia, you're not, like, wearing them down and then having them join your team. You can initiate conversations with them, and... You have to kind of get a feel for the monsters, and depending on how you interact with them, they will either join your team or attack you.
Right.
But that's not even true. Some of them, there was one who was nice enough to heal me during the battle while I was talking to her. She ended up not joining my team, so she attacked me anyhow, but she did heal me beforehand, so that was sweet of her. And then there are certain ones that, like, apparently you have to be higher level than the monsters, because I actually got one to join my team, and then I was level 2 and he's level 3, and he's like, you gotta come back to me when you're a high level.
Yep.
I don't know what happened, because I went back to the room where he was at, because the monsters randomly generate, I guess. But it's not like, you know, like old school RPGs where you walk around the map and you randomly get into a battle. You see them materialize on the map, and you can engage them in battle ahead of time with a quick attack. But yeah, so I didn't see him when I went back to the room, because I wanted him to join me, because in order to finish the tutorial, you have to collect 3 monsters or 3 demons, as they were, to have them join your team. But yeah, like I said, still on the basics, so just those enemies, demons join your team, and as they level up, they also teach you special moves, which is kind of neat. So, like, you can earn various special moves depending on who you have on your team. I believe you can have up to 4, so you have to forget some of them after a while. But it is nice to see that, you know, kind of like, oh, this works for this teammate. I want this move now for myself. So you got to level him up so he can teach it to you, which is a really neat trick. Like I said, I've heard this game is tough as nails and all that other stuff, so I'm not that far into it. I am kind of enjoying it so far, so I'm happy for that. It has that Atlas-style storytelling where they have, like, talking heads, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know was the thing, but after, like, the first cutscene, I'm like, this is Trauma Center. This is basically what they did in that game as well. So, it's nice. I don't really, like, I mean, you're not supposed to like that one character, but there's, like, that one pompous ass who's all, I'm too good for you people.
Oh, yeah, I already hate him, too.
That's Jonathan, or is that...
Jonathan's the good guy, and Navarre is the pompous guy.
So, yeah, that's Shin Megami Tensei 4. Did you want to add anything since you're playing it as well, Dan?
I was going to add a few things, I guess, to clarify some of what you were saying, because I just started also, actually, literally 10 minutes ago, just put it down after saving, because I wanted to do other things, right before the first tutorial dungeon. But I've played a lot of Shin Megami Tensei games. Personas 3 and 4 are two of my favorite games, but I've also played mainline Shin Megami Tensei games. And... you've pretty much hit the nail on the head with most of it. I guess the only thing I would mention is that it's cool how they always make your main character a blank slate, and it's especially apparent in Atlas games. Like in Devil Survivor, they make your character an absolute blank slate. Everybody else has relatively predetermined stat-ups, pretty much like in Fire Emblem. Like, they have a stat-up percentage for each of their stats, so it's kind of predetermined, whereas you get to choose which stats to increase at a level up. And then in Persona, same sort of thing. You level up based on your personas. So it lets you really build your character as much as you want, and then your other teammates fill, like, an arch-type role. So, like, you're going to have a berserker-type or a healer-type, etc. So I really like that mechanic, and I wanted to clarify that for some reason. I don't really know why.
Okay, fair enough. Have you been playing anything else?
Since Animal Crossing came out, pretty much just been playing that, I'll be honest.
Why? Okay, maybe you can explain to me and Earl what is so great about this game.
I think it's one of those things you've just gotta, like with Pokemon, you've just kinda gotta have enjoyed it at the time or something. It's hard to explain why it's just so good, I guess. Or why
Pokemon,
it's so fun.
Pokemon, there's like actual mechanics and progression and a combat system and, you know, all these intricate things that are going on.
Right.
But
right.
Animal Crossing.
I guess I mean more like the appeal.
Yeah.
I've been curious about this. I haven't seen anybody mention it. Does Animal Crossing have an end game?
Technically, I guess you could say an end game, it would be when you pay off all of your loans on your house, you have no more monuments to construct, you've completed all your catalogs, so basically you have nothing to do. Because Animal Crossing is pretty much a game of chores. So once you finish doing all of your chores, I guess that's end game.
But, okay, I was about to say, because does your chores ever end? Because then you can add stuff to your museum, you can plant your flowers, you can get neighbors to move in and out.
Right. You can always do small stuff like that. It's kind of like the comparison with Skyrim. Like Skyrim, they touted as always having quests for you to do. But of course, once you get to the core quests, all the remaining quests are pretty much just fetch quests, gather things. So there's always going to be something for you to do in Animal Crossing as far as chores go. It's just not going to be as engaging as in the beginning when you have a wide variety and tons to do.
Okay. So does Animal Crossing have dragons for you to fight?
I haven't seen any yet. Maybe I'm not at that point yet.
Okay. And it does seem like Nintendo, I don't really know how this works exactly, but it seems like Nintendo's kind of doing the extension stuff with, I think it's called Nintendo Dream Realm?
Yep.
Is that what
it is? The Dream World.
Yeah, you go there and you're able to unlock extra stuff, I guess?
Yeah, you can go to, like, predetermined towns and check out their things and buy some of the furniture in them.
And is this unique to this town, or is it stuff you're able to get throughout the course of the game naturally?
I haven't been myself, but from what I understand, it's some stuff you can only get in the Dream World, like the stuff that Nintendo puts out themselves, but then other people's Dream Towns, it's stuff that you can get on your own.
Okay.
I believe sure. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right, here we go. That's Animal Crossing. What about you, Jason? What have you been playing?
Well, as I mentioned, I've been playing a lot of stuff this week, kind of catching up on a bunch of stuff. Chief among those was The Last of Us, which I've been out for a few weeks from the podcast, so excuse me if I retread any ground here, but holy crap. That game, first of all, if you have a PS3 and you're listening to this podcast or a panelist on this podcast, I strongly implore you. I implore you to immediately go obtain a copy of this game, because it is unlike, in a way, it's kind of bringing together all these different mechanics that are present in other games and polishing them up really well. And in another way, it's like unlike anything else you ever played. And I obviously want to avoid like going into super specifics because, A, you know, I don't want to get into spoilers, and B, we could spend all day talking about this game. But, I mean, just, it's so finely crafted was, like, the impression I would get throughout my entire playthrough. You know, everything from, you know, the characters and their motivations to the crafting system and how it's balanced with, you know, exploring the incredibly detailed environments and managing your resources during combat. And combat itself in the way that there's, like, a constant, like, push and pull between stealth and, like, more action stuff, like shooting and throwing Molotovs. And again, the crafting and creating new resources and crafting and healing and all this stuff is always done. Like, there's no real pause menu unless you actually pause the game. Like, if you're low on health, you need to find a little, like, get duck behind cover and make sure there's nobody rushing you or something, because you're going to take 5 seconds to apply your bandages or whatever. And it's just, like, it's little details like this that just add so much to the immersion of the experience. And then it's all brought forward in the characters and the dialogue, like, both, not just, like, in cutscenes, which are freaking phenomenal. Like, I haven't played Metal Gear Solid 4, but these are the best cutscenes by a long shot I have ever seen in a game. To the point where usually I'm not a fan of cutscenes. I'm like, well, you know, either keep it short or, like, explain the stuff in a way that can be done through gameplay or during gameplay. But the cutscenes are just riveting. They're beautiful. They're extremely well-written, extremely well-acted. And just well composed. I mean, my brother was watching me play a lot of this game. He's just like, dude, I feel like you're just playing a movie. And it's, I mean, we hear that a lot. It's like, you know, and there's all these little sub arguments like, well, games aren't movies, blah, blah, blah. Just forget all that. It's incredible. It's incredibly entertaining. The drama in the game is just constantly has you by the throat. Just everything that goes on. And it's just, it never relents, you know, it's always one thing after another, and then you think something's going to come up, and then it flips it on its head. And that goes down to even the game, on a gameplay level, you know, there's a lot of I wouldn't say a lot, but there's a good amount of puzzle solving. But the puzzles are like realistic situations, like, oh, well, we have to get up to that ledge, let's find a ladder. And that's making it like extremely simplistic. But then later in the game, you'll be like, oh, okay, we got to get that ladder to get up there. And then something happens that kind of riffs on that mechanic. And it's just, it's constantly evolving. And it's just, my God, it's such a good game. Just so good.
So it's decent.
From start to finish, it's just incredible. I don't want to declare it some like hyperbolic thing, like the best game of all time, having just finished it a couple days ago. But, you know, I want to take my time to reflect on it and probably play it again. But it's in that conversation, I think. And at the very least, it's a milestone.
Okay, you're kind of breaking up here.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Bottom line, The Last of Us is awesome. And
yay.
Everyone should play it
immediately.
Ooh. Last of Us 2012.
I plan on playing it maybe in a year when all the hype's died down and I can kind of play it when everybody else is off doing their next-gen thing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I went into it with a unique perspective. Having worked on it a little bit on the testing side, but not a lot because it wasn't my team's game, so I was just helping out the team who was in charge of it a few times. But I don't know, seeing it during development, I feel like for any game kind of like sours you on it, just because you see it when it has all these problems and all these rough edges and, you know, you're really getting under your skin. And then, you know, when the reviews came out, they're so overwhelmingly positive, and I'm just like, and having played Naughty Dog games before and knowing that I don't like their combat mechanics, you know, that's one thing I've really hated, like strongly disliked about the Uncharted games, is any situation that I had a gun in my hand. And they just pulled it all together for this one. Like, it really gelled, and I didn't want to buy into like any of the reviews at all, but I was very impressed.
Woo woo.
So
okay. Anything else that you've been playing?
Let's see. I kind of prepping for my backlog thing this week. Even I don't know if this counts as backlog, but I finished God of War Ascension.
See, I would count that.
Yeah.
We've had this discussion before on the show. I feel like when it comes to gaming, like, once you're a month old, it's old hat for a lot of people. I mean, that game's like 3-4 months old now.
Yeah, it came out in, I don't remember,
March.
February or March, yeah. So, that was cool. And then I finished Flower, finally, which was...
Oh, wow. That's a...
Okay. That's a backlog title.
That one was a backlog. And that one, too, I got to say, is just also such a unique experience in a completely different way, you know, where, like, Last of Us is, you know, pulling in together all these elements of action games and movies and all this other stuff. Flower is just pure emotion. And it's, like, a really interesting experience. Like, and I had played the first couple levels a bunch of times. I'm like, oh, you know, it's, like, it's about the serenity of being this flower petal, like, floating through the wind. But, like, as you get on to the later levels, or flower pots, or whatever, like, you kind of go through a wider range of emotions, and it's really interesting just what they've done. And there's, I mean, the way that game company, like, also with Journey, like, just operates on this level of tapping into the player's emotions, it's just really impressive, like, how they're able to grasp onto that. And I've also been playing. I've played a lot of games this week. I'm just going to run off real quick. I also tried Jet Set Radio for the backlog segment. Didn't dig it. I don't know if it's just...
The 360 arcade version?
I mean, on PS3, but yeah, the same.
Oh, okay.
Because it was on Plus.
I figured
it
out.
And it's just...
it's a game of its day. I like the Dreamcast, and I'm a huge fan of Sega's output. But I think what a lot of people kind of gloss over in that is with those, is Sega is very huge into arcade games.
Yes.
And they don't hold up as well because they aren't. It's kind of pick up and play games that they were asking full price for, and nowadays it's kind of like they're nice novelties, but they aren't much meat to them. I used to like Jet Set, but it's like then they did the sequel. I'm like, okay, I'm over this concept now.
Yeah, and that's how I felt too, was like, this feels like a Dreamcast game that came out, you know, 14 years ago or whatever. Like, it was, like, the tutorial was really clunky, like, it was ugly with, like, even with the art style, was like, I don't know, just, I played it for, like, 15 minutes and decided I wasn't worth more time. I can see why people like it, but, you know. I also got Nazi, Sniper Elite Nazi Zombie Army on Steam, which was just, I don't know, I mean, you gave it a sniper rifle and a bunch of Nazi zombies to shoot. It sounded pretty awesome, and it's kind of like Pacific Rim, you know? The premise tells you everything you need to know. It's exactly what it is, and it's awesome.
And it sounds awesome, and it doesn't need to do anything else.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And I saw Pacific Rim last night, that's why I thought of it, which was also an awesome movie. But
well, to be fair, Pacific Rim title doesn't tell you anything. But
no, but like the premise, I mean. That,
oh yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm just saying, like, with your sniper or elite zombie, you can kind of get exactly what. That's it. Like, this is nothing beyond the surface.
Exactly.
You want to snipe zombies? You got it. This is the game
zombies.
For you.
Zombie
zombies. So this is the game for you. So
exactly.
Hopefully you have some stuff to talk about next week for your backyard podcast.
Yeah, well, as you're having Xbox issues, I'm having PC issues, so hopefully I get those resolved and I can actually play all the games I just bought on the Steam sale.
Yeah.
But there was one other game we've been playing, which was Remember Me, which I don't understand all the hate it was getting in reviews when it came out. It's definitely a flawed game. I think the combat system needs a lot of work. It feels like it's trying to be like the Batman games, but not enough. Like, I think it would benefit from just straight up copying Batman more. The one hook in the combat that Remember Me does do that I like is you customize the combos. So, like, how it works is you'll unlock, so your X and Y button are the attack moves, right? But you'll unlock specific attacks that are either X or Y. And then you also unlock combo chains of, like, different combinations of X and Y. And then you fill in the combo with certain moves. So you kind of, you know, so you, like, if a combo is, like, X, Y, X, you never choose the first attack, but then you would pick, like, oh, I want this Y to give me back health and this X to be, like, this kick move. And, you know, and then you can swap it out. And I thought it was a really interesting concept. Again, the base combat kind of holds it back from its potential, I think. But that was really cool. And the game, I mean, it's really pretty. The environments, again, coming right off Last of Us, just another game where the environments are just crazy detailed. Like, there's not as much of an exploration element, which I think is a pity because you have less incentive to kind of walk around these beautiful environments. But the game's cool. The main character's really interesting. The story seems like it's going to fall flat, and I'm getting a big, unreliable narrator vibe, but we'll see how it goes.
Which isn't a bad story construct. I actually am a fan of unreliable narrators, or biased ones. But we shall see how it does.
Yeah, I think so far, you know, like I said, the combat's not that great, and the story is whatever. But like, there are things that are hooking me a lot. Like, I think the main character is really interesting. I think this kind of futuristic world where everything's revolving around controlling people's memories and stuff is really interesting, and the platforming is really interesting too.
Really, that's interesting. I didn't actually like the platforming from when I played it. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh,
you
did.
I actually felt the opposite. Granted, I only played it at PAX, so it wasn't even when it was released at the time. Haven't played it since, but I found the combat, like you said, to be an interesting conceptually how it works. it was pretty cool how, like, you can customize the combos, really. And it did have a good sense of flow. Not quite as good as Arkham games, but still pretty good. I didn't find the platforming very engaging, though. I found it kind of like just a stripped-down version of Assassin's Creed. Like, you kind of, you get led here, you do this, you just kind of go through it.
I would say that's fair. It does feel like a stripped-down version of Assassin's Creed, in a way. It's definitely more linear. I don't know what makes me like it. It actually reminds me more of Enslaved combat. I don't know if you played Enslaved, where you kind of have a predetermined path, but I don't know. It's visually interesting with the way the camera moves around you, and they mix in different tricks. Like, as you unlock more abilities, you use those to kind of change the environment around so that you can get through. And again, there's only one path through most of the time, but you still, it's not just like you're pushing forward or something. I don't know.
Right. I get what you're saying. I've not played Enslaved, but I've seen my friends play it. And yeah, I can understand what you mean as far as that goes then. There wasn't much platforming in the demo I played. It was pretty much one fight, one straight segment of platforming, and then like a boss.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, the other thing, the main hook in this game is remixing memories or whatever. That was the thing that caught my eye, I remember, at E3 last year, where you go in and there's like a scene, and you change details in the scene to, like, change the person's memory. For example, like, somebody's on the hospital bed getting an injection. You can change what they're getting injected. You can, like, release the clamps on their wrists so that they can react. You know, little details in the scene that change the way it plays out. And so far, I'm about a third of the way through the game. I've only done that once, which is pretty disappointing.
That is disappointing.
So we'll see. Because that was the main thing that drew me in.
Right, that's pretty much like Remember Me. I mean, it's in the game's name.
Right. So, but that's my busy slate this week.
Rather busy indeed. I guess we'll skip ahead. I don't want to talk about it. I didn't get that far into it, and I want to save it for next week. So that means it's time for news. And yeah, but like I said, it was a pretty decent week because of Comic-Con. We had a couple of major-ish announcements. We're still in that weird phase where people are announcing next-gen titles, I guess. So we got a lot of announcements of, I guess, current-gen smaller titles to a degree. And I'm going to kick it. We got an announcement of, I believe it was Strider.
Yep.
Which I thought was a smaller title, but apparently it's a full retail title.
Is it? I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, it's a 2.5D... they said open world platformer, I think. A lot of this stuff was like secondhand, you know, people I've tweeting convention stuff. But,
So I'm confused really quick because I saw the announcement and it's Strider HD. Is it just a HD remake or is it a
new
game?
No, it's a new game.
Okay.
HD is such an odd title at times, but yeah, it's a new game. It's made by Double Helix, the people who are currently making Killer Instinct.
Yep.
And who have a fantastic resume of video games, including such hits as Silent Hill Homecoming, G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra, Green Lantern, and Battleship. So, yeah. It's out, I think, early next year. It's on PS3, 360, PC, PS4, and Xbox One. And I do believe it's a full retail title. So that was kind of strange. Any thoughts on this?
I only watched the trailer once. It came out with like a gameplay trailer plus a teaser trailer to announce it, I believe.
The same day.
Yeah. I watched those, and I haven't played any Strider games, so I can't really say much about that, but it looked like they kind of took the original Striders sort of like linearity, where it's more like... Gunstar Heroes, you kind of have the level is not supposed to be the main focus. It's kind of getting through the level and the enemies. And they opened it up a little bit more, which I guess is kind of a fear.
Naughty.
It's like, I don't know, I can see people being skeptical of that because it's always interesting how you take a closed game like that and open it up more.
Yeah, I think, like I said, the idea of an open world platformer or 2D game sounds curious, but I could, again, this could just be somebody putting their own stamp on the game's announcement.
Right. I think it's a valid viewpoint, personally.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see where it was. I've actually played the original Strider. He was one of my favorite characters in Marvel vs. Capcom 2, and I played it, I believe, on the Genesis. It's kind of neat. It's kind of, I mean, it's, I don't want to say Shinobi. It's a bit more arcadey than that. So I'm kind of curious to see what they do with it. I guess speaking of ninjas, I don't think this is in the notes, but looking through it, I forgot this was even announced this week. They announced a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, a second one, not the one that's out next month for Xbox Live and PSN. This one is based off the cartoon series. And this one has one of the weirdest SKUs I've seen. It's 3DS, 360, and Wii.
Oh, yeah, I saw you mentioning that on Twitter, actually. That is pretty funny.
That is the three oddest setups. I kind of get it with the 3DS and Wii to a certain degree. Wii U's not taking off. Nintendo's kind of known for family-friendly games. But, and I guess you can play it on the Wii U. It's just really an odd combination of systems. And at that point, why not just make a PS3 version? Yeah. So there's two Ninja Turtles games coming out this year. Both of them are for 4K Cop. I don't know if this one's online or not.
Well, given the systems, it sounds like probably not.
Well, I mean, it could be on the 360, and there's nothing against it on the 3DS, really. I mean, we use it here. I doubt anybody's going to really want to invest in that. We also had announcement of Soul Calibur 2 HD for the PS3 and 360 this year.
I had such a mixed reaction to this news, because my impulse was like, why? Like, I don't know. I was a huge Soul Calibur 2. Actually, Soul Calibur 2 is the game that got me into that series. And to this day, it's the only fighting series that I can really dig my claws into. But, you know, I guess in that sense, when I think about it more, like, Soul Calibur 5 was crap. and Soul Calibur 2 had the best single player, so I won't have Link anymore. But
yeah,
I guess that's cool, you know.
I think that's where a lot of people are kind of mixed on it. I understand that the Wii U is not doing too hot, but Soul Calibur 2, at least, if I remember correctly, I believe the GameCube one was the best-selling version of it. Because of Link, and, you know, clearly he's not going to be in these two versions.
There's question whether even Spawn, who was the Xbox-exclusive character, is going to be in this one.
Yeah, that's right, because they have to license him again. So
yeah, they've been kind of coy about it so far.
It seems weird. It's weird in general. I've always said this is one of the weirdest things where Soul Calibur 2 did really well on the GameCube, and then Namco just decided not to support the system again for the next 10 years with it.
Yeah, well, if you remember, like, you know, as we said, the PS2 version was the least selling one of Soul Calibur 2, and Soul Calibur 3 was a PS2 exclusive, so...
Yeah.
There's a lot of weird stuff. I mean, obviously, I'm sure someone paid for that exclusivity, but still.
Yeah, it's really curious. I am not sure if I'm going to pick
down
this
up. Down for some nostalgia, though. That was a good game.
Yeah, but it's nostalgia at the wrong time. I feel like it's right in between the transition between this gen and next gen. Like, who's going to want to play a game from the... Not this current gen, but the previous gen that...
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think, you know, they did trademark... There was a trademark for a Soul Calibur Lost Worlds this week, which they didn't talk about. But maybe they're trying to build up some more anticipation for a new entry on next gen or something, because...
Yeah, but that still doesn't work. I mean...
Well, I mean, I think just bringing it back into awareness, like... Because, again, Soul Calibur 5 was just crap, and I think it did a lot of damage to that brand and that series. So I think Soul Calibur 2 is widely regarded as the best entry.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
I think I disagree with that personally, but, I mean, it's up there. Like I said, it was the one that got me in.
Well,
I think it generates a lot of goodwill to get this out there with online play, with the single player, like...
I feel like it's one of those Final Fantasy VII scenarios where a lot of people love it because it was kind of one that got them into the series. Where a lot of people who were into it beforehand will probably know another one as their favorite or the best in the franchise.
That's pretty accurate, too, I feel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that. The announcement of new skins in Batman. I think a new villain, Copperhead, who's female in this game, which is kind of cool. And then a bunch of stuff. Oh, Nintendo announced the Pokemon Smash U, or Pokemon Rumble U, is coming to the States and Europe, and that's going to be their first NFC games in the West. I believe for us, it's through GameStop, where you can purchase the toys.
I don't personally know. Sounds about right, though, yeah.
Yeah, woo. I don't mind the Pokemon Rumble games. I just, they need online, and they need to be, like, cheaper than they were. The one on the Wii U, the Wii was $15, and I think the one on the 3DS was actually a full retail product.
Yeah, it was.
They need to be, like, $8. It's just a mind to speed them up, which I don't mind if you're, not $15, though, because your Pokemon has one attack. It's not even a ton of variety.
Well, they have two attacks, in fairness.
two attacks. And I guess you can level up the ones in the toys this time around, so whoop-de-doo.
Oh, that's cool, I guess. I just wish they would stop going halfway on them. Like, the first Pokemon Rumble was only, at the time, Gens 1 and 4, 4 being the most recent one, and then Pokemon Rumble was, like, such a bare-bones single player, they just had pretty much linear levels. I kind of wish they'd expand upon that. That's my personal complaint with it. Make it into a full something. Don't make it into a half something.
Yeah, here's the thing with Nintendo and Pokemon. It's always weird. They did well with this in N64 until yesterday, the Greek GameCube era. Is that they need like a Pokemon Stadium-esque game, because it gets them to model all of the Pokemon in 3D and then just kind of reuse those models for various games. And I'm not talking about like a full MMO RPG, but you know, like Pokemon Snap, Pokemon Stadium, Pokemon there was Pokemon Puzzle League. All that stuff kind of reused the same Pokemon Stadium assets, because you have 150 characters going to reuse them as much as possible. And I think they need to do that, because the Pokemon Rumble U just looks ugly. It's a very ugly game. This is more of Jason's alley. Kevin Time has been confirmed for The Walking Dead Season 2.
Yeah, I think for people who finished season one, it's not necessarily. Well, yeah, I'm not going to get into spoilers, really, but I mean, the fact that you're saying she's in season two, like, it's not.
Oh, that's what I meant. That's what I was spoiling.
Oh, yeah. It's not a huge surprise. It is nice to know that there will, because the way season two ends. And you know, most recently there was like an epilogue episode, 400 Days, which doesn't even have any of the characters from season one. So like, they could have gone in a certain direction with a whole new cast and stuff. And it's cool to know that Clementine's gonna be like a central thread again. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to some other characters, you know, from season one.
I hope Clementine gets the Sarah Connor treatment, where she's kind of like this fraidy cat in Terminator, and then she's this ultimate badass in Terminator 2.
Well, that, yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into spoilers. Go play season one.
Go play season one. There we go.
But that could be my Wolf Rap.
Okay, we also had a surprise announcement and release of Earthbound on a Wii U Virtual Console.
Woo!
Which, I will say this much. I'm a fan of Nintendo. I'm not going to hide that. But I do love that no matter what they do, it always causes some type of reaction among people.
Yeah.
People were upset that they didn't give this a proper build-up. But at the same time, when this was announced, people were saying that, oh, Nintendo shouldn't depend on a 15-year-old game as a system seller.
You can't win.
You can't win. Like, when they announced it, oh, you announced it so far. What, do you think this is a system seller? They announced it the day it comes out. Oh, you couldn't build this up. It's like you want to kill this franchise. And then people are complaining that it's not on. Why didn't you put this on the Wii and the 3DS Virtual Console? The Wii's, like, everybody's always telling them they need to kill off the Wii. This is a way to kill off the Wii. And then there was complaints about the price for it being $10.
What?
That should explain itself right there. If you can complain about
this
a game for being
$10,
this is
the first time this game has been released in the United States. Am I right?
No. It was released on the Super Nintendo, but it's a very. Here's the thing about Earthbound, and
was
this
it the
happens.
Sequel about. That never came out here?
Yeah, the sequel and the original never came out here.
Okay.
The prequel didn't either. Earth, technically Mother.
Yeah. So we only got one of the three games. And this game sold just in 100,000 in the States, I believe. So it's one of those niche titles that people just kind of like, love. And it's always kind of had this reputation where people want to play. And part of the reason, and one of the reasons is, if you ever look at eBay, I'm sure the prices are still up there. The game goes for $250.
Yeah.
The cartridge alone. And people are complaining that it's $10 because it's $2 more than the traditional Super Nintendo title. And it's not, I mean, yes, you know, Nintendo could have charged $8 for it, whatever. Supply and demand, it's the rule of the jungle. But they did go the extra step. Apparently this game comes with this gigantic manual that they included in the game. You can read on the gamepad, or if you have the original game, you can read it on, they have the PDF on a website now too. They had a surprise Nintendo Direct centered around this, but this is a big part of it. They have a website up for it now. So I don't know how they didn't promote it. I've had this discussion before. I don't get the point of promoting something so far in advance. What was promoting a virtual console game a month in advance? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
If this is an eShop title, which I think they did a good job of this week with the Strawberry Kingdom and the DuckTales and that, I don't really know why they're pushing that game, but the Spin the Bottle looks really weird. And that was at their E3 and that was at their Nintendo Direct. Those games were original titles that need their attention, fine. Earthbound, a game that already has a reputation, a game that people already want, give it to them as soon as possible.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't think people are realizing that none of the virtual consoles have ever gotten any build-up. They just kind of were like, oh, here's your virtual console releases for this week.
Well, some of them do get build-up, but, I mean, it depends. Like, I've said this before, and I think this goes for not just virtual console releases. I think the problem with some HD releases as well is that a lot of people who don't use them strategically, which is still a word I can never say properly, and that, you know, like, Earthbound's fine because Earthbound's on its own, but, like, with, let's say a God of War. Sony did this well. They did the God of War collection before God of War 3 came out. This way you can catch up on the series, and then you can play the most recent one a little after it comes out. That's fine. Then you look at something like Ratchet and Clank collection or Jak and Daxter collection. Those came out to what games? Like, there was nothing around them. It was just like, oh, here's some random games. And then, you know, they announced the Ratchet and Clank game for this year, so they could have done the collection this summer to get people excited for it to come out this fall. And I think Virtual Console, Nintendo's done this before with Metroid Prime Corruption. They did the month of Metroid, which leading up to the release, they did Metroid, Super Metroid on the Virtual Console, you know, the 2 weeks beforehand. And that's great because, you kind of get back into the franchise and you can play these old games. It kind of builds up to it. And I think, you know, they gave like, Super Mario Bros. 3 the special honor of being like, the 100th game. That makes sense. But stuff, you know, like other stuff is, Zelda is really just very difficult to do because are you going to wait until the next Zelda comes out and release them all on the virtual console? That's going to be like 4 years into it. Like, Wind Waker, you could probably do it around, but, you know, like, it depends. So, there is some way to do it promotion.
Well, they did the Oracle games just now, and then they're going to have a Link Between Worlds later this year, so.
Yeah, I mean, granted, they didn't fill those up as that, but yeah, they did that. They did the actually, come to think of it, they did the Zelda 25th anniversary. They did the Link's Awakening, they did Four Swords Adventure, they did a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, they did a really good job on that one.
Yeah, so that's great. But yeah, for the most part, like, I don't care how far in advance you announce Super Mario World for me. Like, I don't need you to tell me it's coming like a month before it comes out. And here's the thing, because if they do that, people are like, oh, why are you telling us this? Like, it's an old game. And
yeah, I think it's a lot, I agree with you, I think it's a lot more powerful to be able to say, like, hey, remember that game that you really loved back in the day? You can get it right now.
Exactly. That makes a lot more sense. I mean, Microsoft's done that before with some Xbox Live titles. Like, it's available in the shop right now. Nintendo's done that with, I think they did that with one of the Zelda games.
Four Swords Adventure.
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
Yeah.
And even when they do give build-up, it's like a couple days or a week usually. It's not like they're promoting them for months on. There's no reason to do that. It's ready. Go buy it.
Some of them are, like, they did the Virtual Console I don't even know what they call that property, but they did that thing with the Wii U where it's like, oh, we have these six games and they're going to be 30 cents for a month. And, you know, this is the first game. This is the game in April. This is the, et cetera, et cetera. That makes sense again. Promotion, make people save up. Granted, it's 30 cents. You should probably snap up most of those games anyhow. So, yeah. But, yeah, it's really weird that people are kind of reacting this way to a game they wanted and they got. It's just one of those things that baffles me about the internet. It's like no matter what you get, it's never good enough.
Yeah, there's always something to complain about.
Yeah, like they could have given this game away for free and people would have still said, oh, you're not giving it any proper build-up. So yeah, I haven't purchased it yet. I want to because I'm afraid of purchasing it because you know those games that people always talk about that being fantastic and amazing and you play them and you're worried, like, I don't get it. I think this is going to be one of those games. I'm happy with Noah Ness from Smash Brothers.
Yeah, sadly it is. As someone who's played it, not beaten it though, it is definitely one of those games. It's kind of love or hate.
Yeah. And I sometimes think, and this happens not just with games, but movies and stuff, and music. It's like, it's one of those like, oh, you know, nobody else has really played it, so I know how fantastic it is, and you should all play it now and all that, whatever. So yeah, Earthbound's on the Virtual Console if you want to check that out. What else did we have? Oh, what is Mega Man Unlimited?
It's a fan-made Mega Man game that's been in the works for a couple of years now, and it just released like Monday or Tuesday earlier this week, maybe late last week.
Did Capcom put it off the store yet?
No. They haven't said if they're going to ally with it like they did with the Street Fighter Cross Mega Man thing or if they're going to like go completely against it like they usually do.
Probably. I assume they probably will not do anything. And
yeah.
Like you see, we gave you Mega Man fans what you wanted. Are you not satisfied now?
Right. But that did come out and it's been in the works, I guess, for a few years. I don't remember hearing that much of it during development. Pretty much, for the most part, made by one guy, as far as I'm aware. Maybe a few more people helped out. But it's pretty impressive. What got attention from a lot of people who didn't know it, like me, was the fact that Destructoid did an article on it and reviewed it completely like a full game and gave it a really good, I think, 9.5 review and said that this was such a good Mega Man, it almost is as good as a legit Mega Man game for a fan-made game.
Nice.
Does that mean a legit Mega Man game is a 10 as a benchmark?
Well, it's one of those things. Yeah, okay. So is there anything else that we missed as far as news goes this week?
Halo Spartan Assault came out, but I think none of us have Windows 8 devices to play it on.
Yeah, isn't it like Windows 8 and it's like a specific type of phone that you need?
For the phone version, you need, in the U.S., you need Windows Phone 8 on Verizon.
Okay, so it's a specific phone, a specific OS.
Well, I mean, it's not a phone, it's a platform, Windows Phone 8.
Okay.
But it has to be a Verizon one, because they have a timed exclusive for a month. So next month, everyone else can play it. But if you have a Windows 8 tablet / PC / nobody has a Surface, you can play it on there too.
And a lot of people have Surfaces. That's why they dropped the price $150. And
oh yeah, you mean after they lost $900 million?
Ouch!
Ouch!
That is a lot of money. Well, I guess not for Microsoft. But, you know. The announcement of Warner the Lego Movie video game.
Oh yeah, Lego the Lego Movie the video game.
The Lego Movie looks awesome.
I think that's going to be a candidate for best subtitle this year. Does that count as a subtitle?
What, Lego the Lego Movie the Game?
Lego the Lego Movie the Video Game.
But yes, I believe this is coming out to every system under the sun right now, so...
Is Traveler Sales still the only one making all these? Because it seems like we get like 4 or 5 a year now.
At this point, I assume it's the only thing that company makes.
Yeah, like, they have the full rights to it. So they do that, I guess.
Guess what? They did Lego City on the cover for the Wii U and the 3DS. They did a port of Lego Batman. They're doing Lego Marvel Heroes. They're doing Lego the movie, the video game. They did Lego Lord of the Rings recently. So yeah, they kind of get around. I mean, as far as like pumping these things out.
And pumping them out with pretty good quality too.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things, and another reason they probably avoid such, you know, like Activisionism with Call of Duty, is that they get different licenses and that opens up different things. But also, it's like each license offers them a certain amount of, I guess, freedom with their gameplay. Like, I remember the Harry Potter one. I believe the first one wasn't really that combat heavy.
Right.
Yeah.
But which like is how Indiana Jones was more or less puzzle oriented than combat oriented. Whereas Star Wars was more combat.
Yeah. So, and, you know, Lego City on the cover was kind of a mixture. I already mentioned before how the combat wasn't that great, but it was kind of more of an open world platformer.
It was just like GTA.
But yeah, it's a lot of interesting things that they got going for them. I'm kind of curious. Now I want to know how many people they employ, or if it's like the same 20 people working on all these.
Yeah,
Lego
that's my question, because it's, like, I wouldn't be surprised to learn that this is all they make, but are they the only studio making this? And if so, like, how many people? Because they pump these out. And like you said, like, fairly good quality. You know, I haven't seen any, like, get terrible reviews, at least. They're all pretty consistently good.
Yeah, they're pretty much like our B-tier games now.
Yeah.
Like, the Lego games are just kind of like those million, not that great, but not they're good enough games. And
yeah, they're good, they're solid, and then there's the occasional one that people really rally behind, you know, that they really like DC superheroes and
yeah,
Marvel, I think people are hoping will be like that.
But
and the Star Wars ones, yeah.
Star Wars ones were huge. I mean, that's kind of where this whole ball started.
Yep.
I forgot they did a Rock Band one as well.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
Oh, and they're doing an original Legos game as well this year. Okay, so yeah, they kind of pump these things out. So yeah, that's that for news, I believe. We got questions. Well, I'm still going through this survey. We're just going to do two this week since there's only two of us here, but damn, feel free to answer. Has your taste changed as you've gotten older? If so, why do you think that is? Tasting
game. Dan, going first? Or?
Sorry. Should I go first?
Whoever wants to go first, if you have an answer, go for it.
Go for it, Dan.
I guess I'll kick it off, yeah. Have my tastes changed a little bit in the sense that I used to like all games and now I'm just more open to games. I didn't have a specific game I liked when I was younger. I guess RPGs. Paper Mario was my favorite game at the time. The Paper Mario series is still my favorite series. So I've stuck with stuff I liked, but I've also opened up to more things. So sure, I think my tastes have changed a bit.
Okay, Jason.
My tastes have sort of evolved. I mean, they've kind of evolved as the medium has. Like, I've been playing games since, I mean, I remember playing the original Super Mario Brothers, even though I was just a wee toddler back in the day. But I don't know, as you know, things like story and character development and all these other things have become more important, like, that's kind of what I've gravitated more towards, too. And then, on the other hand, like, first-person shooters used to be my favorite genre, but, like, it's so saturated now that it doesn't grab me most of the time anymore, like, on its own. Like, I still play them and enjoy them, but it's not. So, in that sense, like, yeah, I guess, but I still, like, my tastes have evolved, but they're still similar, you know? Like, I still enjoy platformers. I still enjoy shooters. Like, it just depends. I like things that are new. I think that's the thing that's stayed consistent. Things that are new get me the most excited.
Okay. I think I'm going to echo the evolution method. My taste in games hasn't changed much. My favorite genre has always been platformers. I still am always super excited for a new Mario game. For the most part, we've kind of been through this with 3DN and kind of 3D World and New Super Mario Brothers U and 2, where I don't get excited too much for the games because it's kind of a known quantity, but I do get excited when they come out because they're excellent games. Still a huge fan of Sonic, as much as he's hurt me, and, you know, I'm always willing to try 2D and 3D platformers. You know, I was watching a commercial the other day for Grub, and I remember trying that game back in the day. And so actually thinking they should make a sequel to it. I will say one thing, and this is kind of the follow-up to the next question. One thing that has changed with my taste in games is that I'm a bit more open to multiplayer games now. I'm a huge fan of any game that kind of has online co-op. I think part of it has just been growing up and growing apart from friends. Like, I've mentioned this before in the show. A lot of my friends don't live locally because we kind of went to school and fit off afterwards. So any type of games that we can get that we can play together, especially if it has more than two people, four is ideal, eight, whatever, that we can play together is always welcome in my home. It's one of the reasons I'm a huge fan of Left 4 Dead. I've mentioned before we've been playing Dead On for most of this year. We're getting the Ninja Turtles game if I get my Xbox working in August and stuff like that. So, yeah, I've added co-op games to my repertoire as one of, like, probably my second favorite genre, even though that's not technically a genre since it encompasses all types of games. But, yeah, I've
in a way, it's a genre.
Like I said, this kind of answers the next question for me, but are you a social or solitary gamer?
Should I go first again?
I'll answer this first because yeah. I go tied into my point. Is that I'm half and half. Like I said, I have online games like playing co-op and stuff like that. Competitive is, you know, isn't my bread and butter, but I'll do it if I have friends. I won't do it on my own. But I am still a solitary gamer, and this goes as far as to I will make sure I'm disconnected from Xbox Live whenever I'm playing a single-player game because I don't want people interrupting me, sending me messages, or sending me friends, you know, like sending party invites.
Well, Mr. Popular.
Well, it's the same thing. Some of my friends notice I do the same thing with Netflix or anything. Any type of video service has no notifications on any of my systems because I don't want to be interrupted if I'm not specifically asking to play a game, which you usually know because I usually go on with the knowledge if I'm going to play a game with somebody because I ask them ahead of time. So, huge into social when I want to be, but if I'm playing single play, I'm playing single play. I'm disconnected from the world as much as possible. And Jason?
I think for me, I mean, obviously I do both, but I'm also more of a solitary gamer. I think that just plays into, like I just said, like I'm most drawn into like story-driven single-player experiences. So, but you know, when the right game comes around and there's a, you know, multiplayer to play or co-op, like I'm all about that too.
Okay. And Dan?
I'm going to echo what you said, actually, Earl. I pretty much enjoy both of them pretty equally. My multiplayer games, I love playing with my friends, like Awesomenauts. I always have installed on my PC, same with Fortress 2, in case somebody wants to invite me to play one of them. And I get really engaged in them. I'll have like whole multiplayer game nights and whatnot. But also I enjoy my single player time, and I enjoy disconnecting to be able to completely immerse myself in the game. So pretty much what you said.
I just want to add one thing, which is I just thought of, I enjoy the single player experiences and then talking about them socially afterwards with other people who have had those experiences. Does that count?
That's another social aspect.
Oddly enough, I'm not huge into that. Which is odd because I run a podcast about video games.
Yeah, and comics and general nerd stuff, which is kind
of
the thing
but
that
that
you.
A lot of that times it tends to be more mechanic-y and more kind of factual. Like, it's never usually about, like, maybe we can go to this podcast again, but I don't know how often I've actually talked about, like, how a game has affected me. Like, usually it's about, I enjoyed it, I didn't enjoy it, I enjoyed this, I enjoyed that, but it's hardly ever about, like, what it meant to me or how, you know, like, what was important about it from a personal standpoint, I think.
I think it would be fascinating to hear your thoughts on The Last of Us. Just because there are a bunch of different aspects that you could personally center around as being the part that, you know, drives the game for you. It could be different from other people.
Yeah, I'll see. I mean, most likely, I'll probably have to pick it up before the end of the year, because from the way you're talking about it, from the way Phil's talking about it, it's probably most likely going to be part of our Game of the Year discussion.
I would say that, yeah.
So, yeah, it probably would help to play it at some point. I actually don't even have a contender for Game of the Year right now.
I have two.
I don't think I've played either one of them.
No, yeah. Discussed them both on this podcast. So.
I'm pretty sure right now Game of the Year contenders are those two for most people as well.
Really? Because I don't think that... It sounds... Well, my other one would be Tomb Raider, which...
Oh, okay.
I feel like I love that one, other people.
That one would be Bioshock Infinite.
Yeah, not so much for me, I have to say. I mean, I'm enjoying it, but... We'll get into
this more in the fall when we do our fall preview show. But I think the one game that out there at the end of the year that I really think has a chance of usurping those two is probably Watch Dogs, if it is up to its potential.
GTA.
See, I feel like GTA is, you know what you're getting.
I think Rockstar has done a good job of kind of pushing themselves. New directions for each of their games.
Like I said, we'll discuss this during our fall preview show, usually the first week of September, because I think, you know, with the transition into next gen, we're not going to see as many good mega titles in November. We kind of have the usual suspects at this point, and that's it. And, you know, Nintendo can always surprise with anything between worlds.
There's also a little game called Pokemon.
Wind Waker, although that's a remake.
I'm kind of curious. Has Pokemon ever won a Game of the Year award? I feel like Pokemon's problem is that it's like I said with GTA, it's a known quantity. You know exactly what you're getting with Pokemon, and I feel like no matter how great those games are, they're fantastic games. I feel like it's always going to be like, yes, it's a fantastic game. We know it's a fantastic game. We expect it to be a fantastic game because it's the same game.
Well, could you have said the same thing about Super Mario Galaxy 2, and yet that was our co-game of the year that year.
That was different, though, because it was...
No,
like
that's exactly the same thing. You expect it to be good. You know what you're getting.
Yeah, but that's different when there's one other game, and then there's what this is, the seventh generation of Pokemon?
Well, I mean, you could base it off.
It's the first one on the 3DS. It's the first one in the 3D world. Like,
I mean, it could radically shake up the formula. I mean, Sky Battles and all this other cool stuff. I'm just saying that I feel like Pokemon is one of... If Pokemon is, like, the most underrated, commercially and critically successful franchises we have, because it's a game that's played by millions year after year. It continues to do well with fans and reviewers, but nobody ever talks about it in any type of light as it's like this critical darling. It's just kind of a huge game.
I think it has that stigma that it's a kid's game, so people...
Which works, which is a reason why it works, I think. I think if Pokemon tried to make it too complex, like a quote-unquote adult RPG, I think that's when it would start to lose people. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of these games that try to be Pokemon never succeed, is because Pokemon is simplicity at its best, but it's also extremely difficult and complex and nuanced.
Yep. Speaking of sequels to our former games of the year, there's also Saints Row 4.
Saints Row 4, which I think has potential. We shall see. August is going to be a hell of a month.
August, right around the corner, too.
Yes, it is. My wife's not happy. I mean, my most anticipated game is out then, Dream Team. You got Saints Row, you got Splinter Cell, which... probably can be in contender. I'm sure if it's anything like Conviction, Jason will still hate it.
What? I love Conviction. You're confusing me with Martin.
Oh, okay.
Conviction was my favorite, and I'm excited for Blacklist.
Yes.
And Spies vs. Mercs. Oh, thank you. Finally.
Yeah, so there's a lot of games coming out in August and throughout the year. Pikmin 3. I don't know if that's going to be anybody's game of the year, but it's up there. So, yeah. That's August.
Definitely not Wonderful 101.
You guys shut your mouth. We're not getting into this right now. But I want to thank Dan for joining us. And for myself and Jason, this has been Dual World in episode 118.